I want us to talk in a moment about a variety of different recordings so that we can maybe guide people to some things that might be interesting and maybe suggest to them one or two or three recordings that might be considered essential to better understanding of Rite of Spring. But it occurs to me that one of the reasons that the Rite of Spring, we still talk about the Rite of Spring today, and it's maybe the reason that we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Rite of Spring, is partially because of that scandal. It's contributed to the interest that people have in the Rite of Spring, and yet at the same time, some of that scandal has continued to attach itself to the Rite of Spring. And I think it's one of those reasons that people say, well, this is it's too pagan, it's too it's vulgar, and you know, it's not a great piece of music. It's so the scandal of it all has contributed to the longevity of the score, but it's also contributed to still somewhat of an misunderstanding of the Rite of Spring.
Well, I think it was maybe Ravel who, when Stravinsky showed it to him and played him some of it, was astonished, and I think he called it barbaric and profound. Yeah. And that it is that, to paraphrase Ravel, whatever he said, that this is the thing about the Rite of Spring that I think still shocks people and is so new. When you see it and you see this just incredibly primitive and rhythmically basic approach to the work, and at the same time you are at the heights of complexity in terms of the composition itself and the bringing together of all of these in a kind of elegance of form, and then layering on that an equally profound and elegant choreography, it's just one of those moments in art when a whole lot of elements actually came together. And I think part of what made the scandal so scandalous and the comedy of it all was people say it was too much. It really was too much. And people were just stunned. But what was important is the fight that night, and they don't talk about this at the scandal. It is true there was a fight. It is true that people broke into argument. It is also true that a very large part of the audience at the end of it, and this is attested to by people that were there like Proust and Cocteau and people who were there, that people stood up and shouted and applauded those who liked it.
Do you remember the first recording you heard of Rite of Spring?
You know, I really don't. I want to say Pierre Boulez, but I'm not sure. Like you, I've heard so many versions over the years that I think it might have been Pierre Boulez. And then later, I thought it was Leonard Bernstein, but as you and I discussed, upon rehearing it, I didn't remember it being, for me, maybe the greatest recording of it I know. I was so stunned upon listening to it for us to do this talk that I think it was among the earliest, but frankly, I don't remember it being the way I hear it now.
Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic, 1958. And that Ron Moore's choice as the one to have, the recording of the Rite of Spring, that is. And I might almost jump onto that train as well, Ron. But recording I've always enjoyed of the work, and it's interesting that you mentioned Boulez, because Boulez taught the piece, they say, to the Cleveland Orchestra, and then Mazel came along and made a recording of it and essentially mimicked what the orchestra played the work as Boulez had taught them to play it. I'm not sure if that is isn't a little bit unfair to Lauren Mazel, for Lauren Mazel is a very able orchestra, a very able conductor, and he can bring a very personalized and exciting interpretation to whenever he wants to. Not every recording that you hear with Mazel finds him engaged, but I always thought that the recording that Mazel made with the Cleveland Orchestra showed him very much engaged. You'll find debate about that, but it's one of the recordings that I kept coming back to whenever I was really learning the score and learning recordings and contrasting it with a recording with Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And you know Chicago was one of my favorite orchestras,
right.
Is one of my favorite orchestras. And you would have thought that I would have come out very much favoring Schulte and Chicago. And it's a great recording, and he brings that barbaric character to the score that's so essential. But in the end, I don't know if it was because it was the beginning of the age of digital, and Telarc was just beginning to come on the scene and make those wonderful-sounding recordings, or the quality of the Cleveland Orchestra, or if it was something special that Lauren Mazel brought to the score. But I always enjoyed that. And I'm not sure if that would come out on top were I voting on the best recording of the Rite of Spring right now, but I think it's still definitely one that people should take the opportunity to listen to. Another one I know that you have enjoyed, and I have as well, is the recording with the Met Orchestra and with James Levine.
Absolutely. I love that recording. And it should be said, apropos what you were saying about Lauren Mazel just in passing, Pierre Monteux, as you know, was one of those who was not just a great conductor, but was also a great pedagogue and taught a lot of people. And among the people who were part of that school that he had that took lessons were Neville Marriner, Igor Markevich, Andre Previn, and Lauren Mazel.
Well, so maybe he inherited a little bit of the tradition of Rite of Spring.
A little bit of that tradition. But as you were saying about the Met is, to my mind, one of the greatest orchestras in the world. It's up there with Vienna and the Concertgebouw. And it has been wonderful that among Levine's endless talents, being a great accompanist at the piano of Lieder and once again a great teacher of conductors, that he has taken some time off from taking the Met Opera Orchestra from doing their opera work and doing really a huge range of things. I think for a while there, he would take them to Carnegie Hall, and they did everything from Metamorphosen to Verklärte Nacht, and luckily recorded them, and also, luckily for all of us, made an extraordinary recording of the Rite of Spring.
We have to ask ourselves, as we do with recordings of cycles of Beethoven symphonies, with cycles of Strauss tone poems, has everything been said now through recordings that there is to be said? Is there a future for yet other interpretations, I wonder, of the Rite of Spring?
Well, I think there is, and I have to tell you, I'm so glad you brought this up, because the thing I was really curious to hear out of that set was Gustavo Dudamel, and it's absolutely incredible. It's a wonderful recording. He's still young, of course, but once again, there's a youthful verve that he brings to it that he does to so much that he does. And I think that he shows it that there's still more recordings to come. And I think we're very lucky now in this age of DVDs that I'm hoping, it's probably been done, I'm hoping that for future generations that they have finally recorded this Nijinsky choreography so that people can see what we're talking about, because it is an amazing thing to watch.
Well, let's kind of leave it at that. I'm glad you mentioned Dudamel, because Jamie Bernstein says that she sees in Dudamel her father. Leonard Bernstein, and the fact that Leonard Bernstein's recording, and I would guess that that was made, what, probably in the 1960s?
It's 58, I believe.
58, wow. Okay, so relatively early in his relationship with the New York Philharmonic. And then you've pointed us toward Dudamel's, and I think he probably brings a lot of that raw energy to the podium that we saw in Bernstein, in a young Bernstein, in a middle-aged Bernstein, and even at the very end. Yeah, he never outlived it, and I don't think Dudamel is going to outlive it either. Well, thank you, Ron. It's been fun talking about the Rite of Spring on this almost 100th anniversary.
Always a pleasure having a conversation with you, and so wonderful to know that 100 years later, still as relevant, as interesting, and as you say, as daring and avant-garde in many ways as it was 100 years ago.
Here's the dude, the voice of the future.